Thank you, Viroqua. Nope. Thank you. You know, Vermont is considered to be one of the most rural states in America. But as I drove here to Viroqua, I kind of think of Vermont now as a major urban center. This is beautiful, beautiful country that you live in. And let me thank Wyatt and Monica Sutherland for allowing us to use this beautiful facility. Foreign Fields for their music. Adam Kramer for his remarks, and Darren Van Ruden for the work that he is doing in agriculture. And especially Rebecca Cook, because we're going to need her in Washington. What I want to do is to say a few words, and we're going to open it up for your questions and comments, but I wanted to say a few words about where I perceive America to be today and where I think we should be going into the future. And what I will be telling you is something that you don't see very often in corporate media, and you're not going to be hearing much from senators and members of Congress. Right now, you are living in an oligarchic society. Now, I am told by some pundits that the American people don't know what oligarchy is. I think they do. I was, for better or worse, actually worse, kind of pushed into the front row when Donald Trump was inaugurated. I was sitting about where you are sitting. Not a pleasant experience. And as some of you may recall, right behind Trump, sitting behind Trump, were the three wealthiest guys in America, Mr. Musk, Mr. Bezos, Mr. Zuckerberg. And then sitting behind them were another 13 billionaires that Trump had nominated to serve as heads of major federal agencies. And as I was sitting there, I really did, I was reflecting on American history and reflecting that way back in 1863, as some of you will remember from your history books, Abraham Lincoln went to Gettysburg, and he was there a few days after that terrible battle where thousands of Union soldiers had died to put an end to the abomination of slavery. And Lincoln stood there, and he wrote this speech very quickly, and he said, looking out in that field, where just a few days before, people had died by the thousands. And he said, you know, we have, I'm paraphrasing, we have a vision of government, and our vision of government that these men did not die in vain for is to establish and maintain a government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And as I sat at Trump's inaugural and I looked around, what it was clear to me is today we have a government of the billionaire class, by the billionaire class, and for the billionaire class. And what I can tell you as someone who has traveled all across this country is the American people will not accept oligarchy. We will not accept kleptocracy. We will not accept authoritarianism. No. So that is what the struggle is about right now. In America today, and you don't hear too much about it, so let me tell you, you have more income and wealth inequality in America today than we have ever had in the history of America. You have today one person, our friend Mr. Musk, who owns more wealth than the bottom 52% of American households. Now, you know, it's a funny thing, and this has a lot to do with who owns the media. What we get outraged about, what we get upset about, what we're allowed to get excited about, all right? If you step back for a moment and you say that in America in the year 2025, in the richest country in the history of the world, you got one guy owning more wealth than half the households of America, that is an outrage. That is unacceptable. That is not what this country is about. But it's not just one guy. You have the top 1% today, top 1% owning more wealth than the bottom 93%. You got CEOs of large corporations making 350 times more than their workers. The people on top today and have never, ever in the history of this country had it so good. What's going on for the working families of America? The truth is, and this is again what I'm trying to get across, is that the media doesn't talk about it, and my colleagues in Congress, by and large, don't talk about it. You are living in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, and yet today, in Wisconsin, Vermont, all over this country, 60% of Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. All right, I grew up in a family that lived paycheck to paycheck, lived in a rent-controlled apartment. Family didn't make much money. All over this country, here in Wisconsin, in Vermont, all over, people are struggling, trying to figure out how they're going to feed their kids, how they're going to pay the rent, how they're going to pay for health care. And maybe, dear God, will we have a few bucks saved for when we retire so we can live with a shred of dignity. This is the wealthiest country in the history of the world. 60% of our people should not be living paycheck to paycheck. And let us also be honest about it and acknowledge where we are. Essentially, our economic and political systems are broken in terms of the needs of the working class. Let me talk about our political system, and Becca touched on this for a moment. For the oligarchs, for the people on top, owning the economy is not enough. We have more concentration of ownership, impacts agriculture, impacts every aspect of our lives. You name the industry. A handful of large corporations own it. They control the prices that we pay and what happens to workers. But it is not just the economy that they control. That's not good enough for them. They now own the American corrupt political system. All right, I want you to think about it. Not too many people talk about it, but I want you to think about it, and you decide in your own mind whether I'm right or I'm wrong. Ever since Citizens United, the worst decision the Supreme Court has ever made, what you have are billionaires with the freedom now to spend as much money as they want to elect their candidates, candidates they like, and defeat the candidates they don't like. In the last election, Elon Musk himself spent $200 $170 million to help elect Trump. Does anybody vaguely think that this is what democracy is about?
No.
You have, it's not, and by the way, what happens when you donate $270 million to somebody's campaign? You get what you paid for. And Mr. Musk was appointed to run the United States government for 3 months, lay off thousands of federal employees, including 7,000 employees at the Social Security Administration, threatened his proposal was to lay off 80,000 employees at the Veterans Administration. Yeah, that's a real thank you to the men and women who put their lives on the line to defend this country. All right, and on, thousands of workers, scientists who are helping us combat major diseases. So Musk got what he paid for. But what I want to say, it is not just the Republican Party, it is the Democratic Party as well. As some of you may know, I have helped lead in the Senate the effort to end all U.S. military aid to the Netanyahu government to stop the starvation of the children in Gaza. Now, I don't have to tell you what's going on in Gaza. Many of you know, and it's almost unspeakable, and it's just terrible. All right, we're talking about over 60,000 people who have been killed, mostly women and children and the elderly, over 140,000 wounded, including 18,000 children. What makes that war so despicable is that essentially U.S. taxpayers are funding it. And last I heard, the American people do not want to spend billions of dollars starving little children to death. Now, the good news is that in recent weeks and months, we have gotten more and more Democratic senators on board to say no more military aid to Netanyahu. But I will be honest with you and tell you that the reason we don't have any Republican support at this point, or not enough Democratic support, has to do with super PACs like AIPAC. The point is, if we want to live in a democratic society, we have got to get rid of this terrible Citizens United Supreme Court decision. We got to get rid of super PACs. You know, some of you may remember Winston Churchill said, "Democracy is the worst form of government except for all others." It is messy. In this room, there are disagreements. But what every person here believes, and I believe most Republicans believe, that what this country is about, what people fought and died to maintain, is our right to disagree with each other, to run our own government. To understand that we live by the rule of law and that you don't always win. I have lost elections. I don't go around and say, oh, it's a fraud. I didn't lose. Sometimes you lose. That's what life is about. We live by the rule of law. That's what democracy is about. And we got to teach Donald Trump that lesson. All right, we're going to work hard to do our best every day to stop Trump's outrageous actions. But it is not good enough just to be against Donald Trump. We got to be for something. In my view, healthcare is a human right, not a privilege. And I want all of you to think hard. How does it happen in our great country, where we have so many really smart, innovative people, we have all of this technology, why do we remain the only major country on earth not to guarantee health care to every man, woman, and child? Why are we spending, and this is an incredible fact, we are spending over $14,000 for every man, woman, and child in this country for health care. You got that? That's $56,000 for a family of four. And yet we have 85 million Americans who are uninsured or underinsured. We have the lowest life expectancy of any major country on earth. And we have 60,000 people a year dying because they don't get to a doctor on time. So our view is not complicated. The goal of a healthcare system in a civilized democratic society is to provide care to all people in a cost-effective way. The goal of a rational healthcare system is not to exist as the current system does, to provide massive profits to the insurance companies and the drug companies. So this is not a radical idea. And the point that I want to make to you over and over again is the ideas that I am talking about, that Becca is talking about, are not radical ideas. I know that the National Republicans will say, oh, these are radical fringe ideas. This is what the American people believe. But it's not just our healthcare system that is broken. And again, the richest country in the world is where you live. You tell me, think for a moment, why, when every psychologist who studies the issue understands that 0 through 4 are the most important years of intellectual and emotional development for a human being, right? We all know that. So I got politicians in Washington, they stand behind the flag and they say, I love America. But somehow they do not love the children of America. Why in God's name are we giving $1 trillion in tax breaks to the 1%, and yet we have the highest rate of childhood poverty of almost any major country on earth? So when we talk about education, we're talking about living in a competitive global economy. We're talking about education as a human right. Again, not a radical idea to say that every child in this country should be able to go to a quality child care center at a cost that is affordable to their parents. Not a radical idea to say that our young people should know from their earliest ages that if they study hard, they can get a higher education regardless of their income. Because we're going to make public colleges and universities tuition free. Some people say, oh, making public colleges and universities tuition free, what a radical idea. Do you know that in the United States of America, 60, 70 years ago, major university systems like the City University System in New York, University System in California, and state colleges in Vermont and elsewhere were tuition free. Yeah. not a radical idea to go back to where we were 60 or 70 years ago. It is not a radical idea to say that we should not be paying the highest prices in the world for prescription drugs so that one out of four Americans cannot afford the medicine that their doctors prescribe. It is not a radical idea, as Becca said, to end this absurdity in Washington where we have a starvation minimum wage of 7¼ an hour. Let us make that minimum wage a living wage, at least 17 bucks an hour. Not a radical idea to say that we should not remain one of a tiny number of countries around the world that does not guarantee paid family and medical leave. You could tell a lot about where a country is at by how it treats its most vulnerable people, in this case, the elderly and the children. In America today, again, I keep saying this, the richest country in the history of the world, 22% of seniors are trying to survive on $15,000 a year. How does anybody survive on $15,000 a year, let alone a senior who has health, often has health problems? All right. Now, we got Republicans there in the Congress who think we should cut Social Security. Well, I've got a somewhat different idea. I think we should expand Social Security benefits. And it is not hard to know what to do. Right now, somebody makes $10 million a year, somebody makes $186,000 a year, they pay the same exact amount into the Social Security Trust Fund. If you lift that cap, scrap the cap, you can bring substantial sums of money into the Social Security Fund, raise benefits, and increase solvency. And what is certainly not a radical idea, because this is something that women have fought for generations. When you got people talking about freedom, well, to me, freedom means that it is women who control their own bodies, not the government. All right, let me just conclude by telling you what you already know. These are difficult times for our country. But what you also know is this is not the first time in American history that we have had to overcome crises. You know, going back from the American Revolution, and sometimes we forget about this, small group of people living in a colony stood up against the most powerful military force in the world, the British Empire. They beat them. We had people in the abolitionist movement in the 1840s with great courage taking on slavery. You know, we had workers fighting for workers' rights, taking on their bosses, getting shot down, getting jailed. We had women fighting for the right to vote and for other basic rights. We had the gay community standing up and demanding the right to love people who they wanted to love. So we have had to struggle. This country, that's what it is. If you want justice, Frederick Douglass, I don't know if I'm paraphrasing him, but basically what he said, freedom is never given to anybody. It's never given to you. You got to stand up and fight for it. And that's where we are right now. The bad news is we have a demagogue in the White House, somebody who does not believe in democracy, somebody who scapegoats people, tries to divide us up, which is really a very ugly thing to do. You know, to divide us, we're supposed to hate this group of people, we're supposed to hate that group of people, and then we lose our focus on what we should be doing. Instead of hating each other, let's come together and fight for an economy and a government that works for all of us. So the bad news is we have a demagogue as president, but I will tell you, again, from personal experience, just last night, we're in Davenport, Iowa, just, you know, huge turnout all over this country. People demand and want a government that works for all of us and not just a few. They do not want too many people in Wisconsin and Vermont fought and died to defend American democracy. And we're not gonna let Trump or anybody else take that away from us. So we got a lot of work. We've got a lot of work on our hands, but I believe that on almost every major issue out there, the American people are with us. So let's stand up, let us fight back, let us create the kind of economy and government that the American people deserve. Thank you all very much. Okay, thank you. Now, let me tell you, it is not Bernie, it's you. It is you and you, all right? I mean, if there's ever a time when we need a strong grassroots movement, and what I see here today is that we're gonna have it here, all right, this is the moment. So, all right, Faz, we're gonna go out and take some questions right now. All right, anybody have a question, just raise your hand. I see a gentleman right there, blue.
Keep the military out of our big cities.
Okay, all right, let me say a word about that one. Okay, all right, did everyone hear the question? Keep the military out of our big cities. All right, okay, all cities, okay. Let me tell you what I think is going on. Do we have a crime problem in big cities? Yes. Do we have an immigration problem? Yes. No. But what we need is a rational democratic response to those problems. All right, and what Trump is doing, and this is part of the movement toward authoritarianism, is, you know, and this comes from the party that believes in local control, right? How many times I have heard on the floor of the Senate, get the government off our backs, let the people decide. But suddenly you got a president who thinks it's okay to send tanks into big cities. So we're gonna solve the crime problems. But for Trump, this is nothing more than a power display. I got the power, I'm gonna use it. And by the way, this is not unrelated to usurping the powers of the Congress, to ignoring court orders, to intimidating the media, to intimidating universities and law firms. He has the power, he wants more power, and to hell with democracy. We're not gonna allow that to take place. All right, other questions? That's, I think it's a woman back there. Becca, come on up here.
Hi.
The hard question, she'll answer.
I have a question for both of you. Thank you for coming together here today. My name's Krista. I live in Viroqua. I have three small children down here. I attended two town halls where Van Orden did not come, and I asked questions at both of them. And most recently, Mark Pocan came. And Rebecca, I'm glad that you're here because I'm excited that you can both answer this. So much of the current administration's goal is to divide states and divide people and divide the federal from the ground. What do you say to encourage and empower people like me, a mother who stays home with my children, has a small business, to do today? I'm at City Hall, I'm active in Vernon County Dems. What else do you want to see us doing today to be working from the ground up as you're reaching down to help?
So thanks for your question, Krista. And I think it's the things that you're already doing and continuing to do them. I think when we think about where we're at right now in the election cycle, we're 400 and some days away from our next election. The fact that this many people are gathered here today in rural Vernon County is a testament, I think, to how much what's going on matters to you. The fact that you're showing up this early and that you're organizing, right? And I think One of the things, I know I've talked to a lot of people because I feel like every time we turn on the news, it feels like it's something else, right? It feels like this administration is flooding the zone, and it can feel really helpless. But it's continuing to show up at different actions. It's continuing to be active with the Vernon County Democratic Party, but year-round. And I think that that's one of the things that this place does well, that all of you do well, is it's not just an election year that you're showing up for your neighbors. You're always showing up, right? And one of the things that's tough is we don't have a majority in the House, and we don't have a majority in the Senate. One of the biggest things that you can help to do is helping flip this seat. That's one of the best ways to be able to push back on Derek Van Orden and this administration and be able to hold their feet to the fire. Continue to show up the protests that you're showing at, that you're coming to. Continue to go to the Vernon County Democratic Party meetings. And continue to show up when the call comes out, right? To be knocking doors, to be making phone calls. I think the one last thing that I'll quickly say is that it can't just happen in our own bubbles, right? We have to expand our big tent. And I think a lot of these ideas, it comes down to values that I think we share as Wisconsinites. It's not about being a Democrat or a Republican. And leading with those conversations with that, it's like, how do we get more people to be on our team?
Okay, thank you. Well, I agree with what, let me just tell you, in these moments, we got to go outside our comfort zone, in a sense. You know, we live our lives, but I think the country and the history of our country and our love for this country calls us to do more. A number of months ago, we sent out our mailing list, and we have millions of people on our mailing list, and we said, look, we need dedicated, honest people who are concerned about the working class of this country to start running for office. Not necessarily, you know, this is Congress, that's big, but you can run for school board, you could run for local city council, state legislature. We were utterly amazed. We got 7,000 people, 7,000, who right now, is that correct, Fess? 7,000 people who are now undergoing training to how to run for local and state office. In other words, here is the simple truth, and you all know it to be true. Democracy is not a spectator sport. This is not, I know you all love the Green Bay Packers, but this ain't it's not a football game, and it's not a beauty pageant, and it's not a great concert. You are democracy. And nobody knows better than you what you need in your own lives. And it's not a reality show, right? Which is what we got now. And that means that you gotta get out of your comfort zone. And what, you know, Becca mentioned many of the things, and you mentioned many of the things that we can do. Look, right now, on Sunday, I'm gonna be in Chicago talking to doctors, wonderful, wonderful resident doctors who are working 80 hours a week, who are trying to move us toward a healthcare system for all people. Support doctors. When workers go on strike, support workers. We need a better educational system. Support teachers. Woo! So in every community, the issue is different. Right now, you know, you and I, we live in very rural states. Family farmers under tremendous pressure all over this country. Well, you know, what we believe coming from rural communities is a rural way of life is a good way of life, right? How many people I have talked to, including Beck, you grew up on a farm, right? It is a good way of life. We're losing that. There's no reason why we need good quality food produced in this country. There is no reason why we should not, instead of supporting the big agribusiness guys, support local farmers all across this country. In other words, there is no lack of stuff that we should be doing. Okay, other questions? Gentlemen, right here.
Thank you. All right. My name is Brady. I grew up in Westview, Wisconsin. I currently reside in La Crosse. One of the biggest things I'm going through right now is I'm trying to find myself a forever home, somewhere to live, right? The housing market is disgusting. It is going up and up and up. And it is making it harder for people like my age who cannot pay for housing. And Bernie, I'd love to hear your answer too. And Rebecca, I would also really like your answer, especially because you represent us in our areas. How can we fight this? How can we stop the prices of housing? I mean, these tiny little houses are going for hundreds and hundreds of thousands of dollars. We can't afford that. And my generation, my age, is struggling. So what can we do to get us a home?
Okay. Well, the short answer, and there's a longer answer as well, the short one is, instead of spending $1 trillion on the military, maybe we build 5 million units of low-income and affordable housing. And put a lot of union workers to work building that housing. But you raise the point, and again, what I am begging everybody to appreciate, and we don't talk about it enough. There was a poll done by a group called Pew, P-E-W Research, and they're a really very respected organization. And this is the question they asked a couple of years ago. They said to the American people, listen to this question. Do you think that you today are better off or worse off than somebody in your position was 50 years ago? You understand the question? What do you think the response was? 60% said worse. Now, take a step back and say, well, wait a minute. We got computers. We got cell phones. We got flat screen TVs. We got new technology. Why do the American people in large numbers think that we are worse off than we were 50 years ago? One of the answers is that when I was a kid, what people expected is that they would, in fact, be able at a reasonably young age to buy their own home. That was not a utopian dream. But right now, everything being equal, young people are going to buy, if ever, that first home at a lot older age than their parents. How does that happen in the richest country on earth? It has everything to do with the national priorities. Do we give tax breaks to billionaires? Do we spend all kinds of money on the military? Or do we build low-income and affordable housing? Do we have childcare? Do we have health care? Do we have good education? But you got a system now where the people on top, and I got to tell you, because I deal with these guys. You would think, I mean, I'll tell you a story. True from Vermont, I suspect true here. I'm on the Veterans Committee, and I take veterans issues very seriously. So I go out to veterans, and I say, look, do you know that there are all kinds of benefits that you are entitled to? And people would say, happened to me so many times. People said, well, Bernie, I know that, but you know, somebody else probably needs it more than I do. You ever heard that?
I hear it a lot,
okay,
especially in Western Wisconsin.
All right, and what this speaks of is a generosity of heart. The truth is, these benefits are there. People should take advantage of it. But they're saying, well, you know what? I'm okay. Somebody needs it more. That is a human spirit that I would hope that all of us have, that we worry about somebody else more than ourselves, especially if we're doing okay. That is not the mentality of the oligarchs in America. You might think that if you had $10 billion, it would be enough. It is not. And I tell you this in all seriousness. These guys are very religious people. But their religion is not to do unto others as they would do unto you. Their religion is greed, and they worship on the altar of money. They want more and more wealth and more power, and they don't care who they step on together. They can make more money building condos that you'll never afford. That's what they'll do. And they're prepared to destroy Social Security and Medicare so they can get even more tax rates. That is what you are up against. And let's not kid ourselves. All right, other questions. All right, we got a young lady right here.
Hi, my name's Hannah. I'm a student at the local university in La Crosse, and I come from a family of teachers, as do many of the women I came with today. I love our teachers. Growing up in that environment, I've got to see kind of how politics has come into public education. And over the last year, I've got to see the turmoil of how this is all unfolding. And I want to know, specifically in even Wisconsin, how are we going to protect the people who are protecting our children every day?
Well, first of all, thank you for being interested in going into education. We need great teachers in America. And one of the cultural things that we have got to turn around, I mean, there's so much that we have got, you know, you asked me, the woman in the back asked me, what do we do? And there's so much to be done. But one of the cultural revolutions that we need is to say that, you know what, maybe we should appreciate teachers more than billionaire stock manipulators. Yeah. All right, we got to change our value system. All right, so if we are respecting teachers, you got to pay them a decent salary, right? All right, in rural Vermont, there are teachers today, I don't know what it is here, starting off at $35,000, $40,000 a year, and often leaving school in debt. Now, how are we going to ask great young people to go into teaching if we're not paying them a salary that is decent and they have to pay off student debt? So one of the things that I believe in very strongly is you want to go into teaching, I don't want you to have any student debt, okay? But you cancel that. And if we take education seriously, and by the way, there is a war going on. The oligarchs want to destroy public education. You know that, all right? So they can make money. They want to make money out of everything. You know, they want to make money out of little kids playing ball. You know that? It never ends with them. So we have legislation in that says any teacher in America, anybody who starts teaching, starts off at least $60,000 a year.
Look, I'll start by saying that I am a proud product of Eau Claire Public Schools. And I had some time this spring that I spent volunteering actually at the elementary school that I, you know, grew up in that made me, right? And was so surprised, I think, at for teachers everything that their day looks like, right? And where students are coming to school. And for third graders that don't know how to read, right? I was thinking about the Nancy Drew chapter books that I was reading then. And so we've absolutely got to be focused on making sure that our teachers are paid what they deserve. And that also comes with supporting unions and supporting our teachers' unions. I talked a bit about Act 10. And what Scott Walker did to decimate worker power and decimated a lot of public educators' power. And when I'm in Congress, I promise to pass the PRO Act to undo what Scott Walker and his cronies did. So.
I was, just last month, I was in the northern part of our state, and I dropped into a summer program in a school. And one of the young women there is a teacher in the school. She's working in the summer program. And I said, you know, she's young. I said, were you prepared? Where'd you go to college? And she told me, were you prepared for the job? And she said, Bernie, I was not. What I'm seeing now in my classroom are problems that I did not know exist. Kids going hungry from dysfunctional families and so forth and so on. So teachers, there was a time when teachers actually taught lessons. In many cases now, teachers are acting as psychologists and mentors to kids who are struggling. True here, I suspect, right? I mean, it's true certainly in Vermont and I think in many parts of this country, which takes us to the broader issue of how we deal with families and with kids and the lack of security that so many families are dealing with now. Okay, now I see a woman right there in the maroon blouse.
How can we get ranked choice voting so that we can vote for the people we really believe in, who are progressives, without sacrificing the elections?
Good. I agree with you. Look, that is going to be an issue. Again, getting back to what can you do? Take that up as a campaign issue. Look, I think the point is right. Sometimes people don't want to have to vote for the lesser of two evils, is what you're saying. So ranked choice makes sense to me. I support it. You have to deal with it. Locally, there are cities in America that have it. There are states that have it. Your job is to make sure that your community in Wisconsin move in that direction. You can do that. And I'll give you an example of something about that. Then I'll give it over to Beck. I'm talking too much, right? See, that's what senators do. You got to understand that. They talk all the time. Where we're making progress. For example, I talked earlier about a corrupt campaign finance system. Turns out that in Arizona, that's how things start, one state, people, the Democratic Party in Arizona passed the resolution that said we should not have super PACs in Arizona state elections, okay? Okay, well, that idea spread to North Carolina. And now this week, the DNC, Democratic National Committee, is going to be voting to get super PACs out of presidential primaries. That's how things happen.
So I'll just make, so where are you from? Where do you live? Yeah, Viroqua. So I just want you to know about an awesome group that is kind of focused more in Pierce County and Dunn County, but still here in the 3rd Congressional District, and it's called GROW, Grassroots Organizing Western Wisconsin. And they are doing a lot of work at the local and county level about ranked choice voting. So I'd really recommend reaching out for things that you can do here in the Driftless and that you can do here in Vernon County. I am a big proponent of ranked choice voting.
Okay. Okay, gentleman right there, sir. Yeah, stand up.
What can we, the people, do to get our elected officials to join the fight, to lead the fight? So many of our elected officials these days, yourself as a shining exception, are being wusses. We need...
Hold the mic a little bit closer.
Did you say wusses?
Huh? Wusses.
Yeah, okay. Trump, wussies, okay.
Trump and his many sycophants have started a gunfight, and we're coming to it with a squirt gun. They're playing hardball, and we're playing waffle ball. What do we do to get our elected officials to join us in leading the fight?
Well, you may have to lead the elected officials. Look, first time I ran for public office in the state of Vermont, I ran for the U.S. Senate, I got 2% of the vote. But undaunted, I ran again. Ran for, and you know what I got? 1% of the vote. But it was a bigger turnout. I got more votes. Too dumb to quit. Ran again. 4% of the vote. Making progress. Ran again. Got 6% of the vote. I ended up getting elected to be mayor of the largest city in Vermont, Burlington, by 10 votes after a recount, all right? Guess what? You can run for office. The only city council meeting I ever went to, I fell asleep. I literally did. It was so boring. All right? You can do it. Don't let what the system does. What the system does is, oh, well, I'm a United States senator. You don't know about this or you don't know about that. I'm smart, you're dumb, and not a, that's crap, all right? If you have a heart that beats, if you know what's going on in your community, if you have guts to stand up and fight, you can be a great elected official. Think about doing it.
So I'll just add that we've got to be on offense. No one is coming to save us but ourselves. You know, I think that it's wonderful to have a senator from Vermont, such a strong leader for nationally for the working class here. But change is not going to come from the outside in. It's come from the, going to come from the inside out. And it's going to be what everybody chooses today to leave here to go do, right? It's on us. And I know that people in this room, in this barn, know that. Because when we have problems in our own communities, we come together to solve them. And so the onus is on us and what we choose to do today after we leave here. And I hope that it's organizing to defeat Derek Van Orden.
All right, the gentleman in the green shirt in the bleachers. Way back in the bleachers there, all right.
Thank you. My name is Dan. I live in Richland County. And the biggest crime wave that I'm concerned about is the gangs of masked kidnappers who are grabbing Latino kids off the streets and out of the fields. It's a danger for workers just to show up at work. And this is totally opposed to the interests of the people here in Western Wisconsin and the people of the United States. We don't stand for people being sent off to gulags and then flown to Uganda. That's not the American way, without a trial. What are you guys gonna do to stop those kidnappers?
I can go first.
Well, as it happens, just yesterday, what was the name of the town? Misty, what was the town we were in yesterday? West Liberty. We were in a town called West Liberty in Iowa. Turns out that it is the only or the first minority community, Latino. The people who work in meatpacking plants work very hard, don't make a whole lot of money. And that's why we had the meeting, just to discuss this issue. So I agree with what Dan said. When you stop, and one of the worries that I have is things become normalized. We see them over and over, we say that's Trumpism, that's... What Dan is talking about are people with masks around their face, picking up people off of the street, throwing them into vans without any due process, and taking them to God knows where. All right? This is what takes place in dictatorships. This is what took place in, you know, communist countries and fascist countries. This is not what happens and must never happen in the United States. You're asked what we're doing. Well, we're on legislation to stop that. All right, at the end of the day, as all of you know, we have a broken immigration system. Instead of mass deportations, what we need is comprehensive immigration reform and a path towards citizenship.
Look, I think it's important to secure our border and to keep our communities safe, but not to terrorize our communities in the way that we've seen this administration do this. I've talked to a lot of folks in this district. I know a lot of communities rely on immigrant labor, from our farm workers to our manufacturing facilities. But what we need is comprehensive immigration reform, and both parties have taken a patchwork approach to this. While people continue to live in the shadows, while very much contributing to the communities that they live in. And so, I echo the senator's sentiments and that we've had opportunities. There was a bill, a bipartisan bill, that came to Congress last cycle in 2024 that there was an opportunity to vote on, that parties were coming together on, right? But Trump shot it down, because he wanted to use that as a wedge issue. He wanted to use that as a means to campaign on. And look where we are today. We need people in Congress that are willing to have a spine to stand up for what they believe in and to stand up for our communities.
I want to just pick up on Dan's point. Again, I was at West Liberty, this small town in Iowa, and we were in a Catholic church. And the church has been doing a good job in defending immigrant labor. And the priest there said, in that community, during COVID, who do you think was out in the meatpacking plants and picking the crops? He himself, if my memory is correct, buried 10 people in a small town. All right. So 5 years ago during COVID, these were heroes and heroines, and now they're being picked up and thrown into vans. All right. And I should also tell you, just the... and I'm sure many of you know, that it turns out that the undocumented in this country have a lower crime rate than native-born Americans. Okay. Okay, gentleman in there in that fancy sweatshirt. What's that? Wisconsin.
That's a starter jacket. A Wisconsin starter jacket.
Hi. Right now, Governor Gavin Newsom is the front runner for the Democratic Party for the next election.
No, he's not. Without getting involved in that, don't believe every poll. We got 3 years to go.
Yeah. That's.
Don't worry
that's
about who's going to be president. Go on.
My question is, what are we doing right now to push more left-wing and progressive Good. Candidates instead of what we've seen before with corporate and centrist candidates?
Well, for a start, maybe let's go to Viroqua, Wisconsin. That's a good idea. Why don't we do that? All right, after I leave here tonight, I'm going to be in Kalamazoo, Michigan, where we're supporting a very strong candidate for the United States Senate. Tomorrow, we will be in Chicago, Illinois, where we're supporting two good candidates, very strong candidates for Congress, and you're going to elect this young lady here to the Congress as well.
Thank you.
But the point is, your question is a good point. What you have got to do, there are great people all over this country. And the idea that, as I go around the country, go to Texas, it's a disaster. There are great people who should be running for office if they had the confidence. It has to come, as Becca just said, from the ground on up. All right, don't always look at somebody else who's on TV. All right? Stop worrying about the people you know who can stand up, be on city council, state legislature, run for Congress. Think about it. All right, maybe one or two more questions. All right, we got a young lady right here. And then we'll go back to the bleachers again.
Sorry, that's my mom and my sister. Hello. I've been a big fan
stand
of
up.
Both of you for a very, very long time. But I was wondering, I'm a first-time voter. I turned 18 last year. And I was wondering, how can you empower more young people, especially my many, many friends, who don't vote? How can you empower them to use their voice to make our world a better place? Because everything could be so much better if we could get a large young voter turnout. Thank you.
Can I start? Well, thank you. Thank you for being here today. It starts with showing up to things like that. It starts with participating, right? And in the 3rd congressional district, we have 6 UW campuses and universities in this district. And so if you don't think the student vote is one of the most important things we have to consider in flipping the seat and talking to young people, it is. And so your voice very, very much matters. One of the things that I saw last cycle when I was running, there was a lot of vibes, right? You saw a lot about Brat Summer, all these things, and that's great. But young people are looking to vote for people that have values behind them, right? They're looking for people that have positions on the things that are keeping them up at night. They're worried about having reproductive health care, right? They're worried about comprehensive immigration reform. They're worried about the opportunity to be able to buy a house and have a job right after they graduate. And I've seen so much of, at least the Democratic Party, just pandering to vibes. And young people want to hear more than that. And so, you know, I think for me, it's showing up and talking about those things, talking about those values and not just, hey, I'm young and cool, right? It's like, what are you going to do for me, right? And I think continuing to get your classmates to show up in those spaces when folks are coming to campus. But for also, you know, it's not about just voters meeting politicians where they're at. I think the onus is really on people that are running for office and candidates getting out there and meeting people and not being afraid to have conversations in real life, right? So that's what I would say.
You have power. Exercise it. I mean, when again, talking about going outside of your comfort zone, were you going to high school or college now?
I'm in college. I go to school in California.
Okay. Then what you can do is you can bring people together and invite your local officials. You can do that. All right. By the way, now you've asked us some questions. I want to ask you a question. There is a technological revolution taking place in America right now with AI and robotics. Okay? That's a fact. How do people feel about it? All right, let me ask you a question. It's a hard way to, you know, do these things. Do people believe that AI and robotics are going to work effectively for them?
No.
How many people think no? Raise your hand. Wow. How many people think yes? Okay.
That's some polling.
All right. Now, it's an interesting point. We have seen over the last 50 years, an explosion of technology. When I became mayor of Burlington, Vermont in the 1980s, we didn't have a computer, all right? We didn't have a printer. We didn't have a cell phone, all right? The theory was that all of this new technology was going to improve your life, right? And yet, real inflation accounted for weekly wages are lower today than they were 50 years ago. All right, I have a real feeling. We don't have the time to get into it now, but I beg of you, pay attention to this. This AI, first of all, could be an environmental disaster because it's going to require an enormous amount of water to produce the electricity that we need, which means higher electric bills. Number two, AI will have an impact on this young lady's generation because when you graduate college, you're going to want to get into an entry-level job to move up the ladder, but AI may be doing that job, not you. Number three, I worry that many kids now, instead of thinking through things, all right, analyzing things, using your mind, critically thinking, are now pressing a button and getting something spit out. And I worry about that as well. So we didn't have time to get into it, but I share the concern of many people here that AI is being pushed by these oligarchs. They're spending hundreds of billions of dollars. My guess is they're not doing it to make your life better. They're doing it to make themselves richer. And it's an issue we got to watch out on. All right. I'm going to wind it up. All right, listen. This was a fantastic turnout. And what I love about it, this is what we believe in, what Trump does not. This is democracy in action. It's coming out among friends talking about the issues. So I thank you all very much, and send this young lady to help me to Washington.